It's a photographer who is attempting to walk across all of the land masses on Earth and take photographs of the people and things that he sees as he's making this journey. It's called the Out of Eden Walk. As this National Geographic photographer was walking through the Middle East, specifically Jordan, he was taking photos of Petra, which is a series of buildings carved out of the side of a mountain. And he says this when he's taking photos of Petra at a Petra at Night event. He says, while on assignment on National Geographic magazine earlier this year, part 3 of our Out of Eden walk, I had to push myself to be interested in what was basically a tourist event. I'm glad I did. As I wandered through the labyrinth of towering ravines that lead paths towards Petra, I naturally became captivated at the shimmering candles, the sheer epic scale that night envelops, where the sky offers no limits and the ground beneath you, your feet, holds sway to the historicity which lies ahead. The treasury, at night, is indeed the most photographed structure in all of Petra. While looking through the camera in the warm light, one can't help but be pulled into a trance-like state. There was one thing missing. I was alone and early, and there were few people around to offer a sense of scale to the grandeur that is the treasury. Without notice, a man who was preparing hundreds of candles, you can see him there in the middle, go back, for the event, suddenly stopped to gander in bewilderment as to why I was there, then left continuing his illuminating task. Were it not for his few seconds of perplexity, there wouldn't have been any poetic solitary sense of scale, no true understanding to the enormous task we can witness today when hands deftly carved the canyon some 3,000 years ago. There's a man standing in the middle of the candles, and he gives the treasury scale. We understand the size of the man, and so because we understand the size, this is a familiar size, we then can have a better understanding of an unfamiliar size. So we actually understand the larger structure more clearly because of the familiar size of the man. This is what photographers, he specifically calls out as scale. So then we can take pictures of men in front of pillars of buildings, and you can see the size of the pillars in terms of the man, because we know the size of the man, and therefore we know the size of the pillars. We know the size of sweet little baby feet in a hand, because we know the size of the hand. The size of the hand gives us scale to the size of the sweet little baby feet. You actually need something familiar in photographs to understand the size of something unfamiliar. Photographers use scale to communicate. What you have in this third chapter of Habakkuk is Habakkuk is going to use scale. He's going to look at things and times and events that the people who were reading this originally and us today, that we understood the scale of these things, and these are familiar-sized things, and he places what's happening to them in that moment at that time in comparison to the familiar things to help them understand the scale of them. Three times he's going to bring up familiar instances to the readers. What you maybe wouldn't understand if you were just reading through the book of Habakkuk, which takes 5 or 6 minutes, even though we've spent 3 weeks on it, all 56 verses of it, is that there is 10 to 30 years of time gap between when the end of Habakkuk 2 was written and Habakkuk wrote chapter 3. So what you have is you have Habakkuk, who is in the raw and hurting moments of experiencing and learning what's going to happen to his people in Habakkuk 1 and 2. Then somewhere between 10 and 30 years pass, and then he pens Habakkuk 3. And in those 10 to 30 years, what Habakkuk has been able to do is gain a sense of scale. We actually know that the Babylonian Empire is actively invading Jerusalem as he's writing this, because in Habakkuk 3:16b, it says this, "Yet I will wait patiently for the calamity to come upon the nation invading us," present tense. So as Habakkuk looked out his window, he didn't see snow as we see today. He saw the Babylonian army sacking, pillaging, killing his countrymen, people he knew. He's looking out his window as he's writing Habakkuk 3 and seeing this thing that he had been dreading for decades literally happening, play out in front of him. And so what you have in Habakkuk 3 is someone who is, he's experiencing the thing he's known has been coming and been dreading for years, but because he's had years to deal with it, he's been able to give it a sense of scale. You know, in Habakkuk 3:3-4, it says this. I see God moving across the deserts from Edom. This is one of the three examples that Habakkuk gives to this undertaking scale. The Holy One coming from Mount Paran, his brilliant splendor fills the heavens, and the earth is filled with his praise. His coming is as brilliant as the sunrise. Rays of light flash from his hands where his awesome power is hidden. And this actually, this passage in Habakkuk 3:3-4, as Habakkuk is watching what's happening out his window, he is writing these words. He's actually referencing Deuteronomy in this. You see, Deuteronomy 33:2-3 says this. It says, the Lord came from Mount Sinai and dawned upon us from Mount Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran and came from Meribah Kadesh from flaming fire at his right hand. Indeed, he loves his people. All his holy ones are in his hands. So some of these same mountains and some of these same geographical things are what Habakkuk is referencing. And what you have in Deuteronomy 33 is Moses, who's leading his people into the promised land, but not entering the promised land himself. As he sends them on, he gives them one last word of blessing. And he says, guys, you've been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, and you felt like all hope was lost, and you would never get there. But you're getting there. God actually has shown himself faithful. So as you enter into this land, remember that God has been faithful to you. And this is what Habakkuk is referencing. He makes reference to, there was a time in the history of our people when you felt like all hope was lost, and then God showed up, you entered the promised land, and God showed himself to be faithful. And Habakkuk goes on, in verses 8-10, he says this, was it in anger, Lord, that you struck the rivers and parted the sea? Were you displeased with them? No, you were sending your chariots of salvation. You brandish your bow and your quiver of arrows. You split open the earth with flowing rivers. The mountains watched and trembled. Onward swept the raging waters. The mighty deep cried out, lifting its hands in submission. This is actually in reference to Noah and the ark. Well, in the Noah story, it says that the deep, the waters came, they sprung forth from the deep. And as this in Habakkuk 3 references mountains, when Noah in his ark finally came to rest, it was on a mountain. So you have water springing forth from the deep, and the ark goes to float. But this ark is like God preserving people. It's God showing up, God being faithful. And then the ark comes to rest on a mountain. And this is exactly what Habakkuk is referencing in 8:3-10. He's saying, this. We look out my window right now, and we see what's happening, and it's painful, and it's hard, and we can't even wrap our minds around it. We're like, God, why are you doing what you're doing? But then we look at what's happening now in the scale of what's happened in the past. There was a moment, there was a time when almost all hope was literally lost, and that there was only a few people on a boat. But even in this moment, God preserved life. God called people back to himself. God showed himself to be faithful. He's looking at what's happening and putting it to scale. And he keeps going. In Habakkuk 3:11-13, he says, the sun and moon stood still in the sky as your brilliant arrows flew and your glittering spear flashed. You marched across the lands in anger and trampled the nations in your fury. You went out to rescue your chosen people, to save your anointed ones. Now this is in reference to Joshua. There's a moment when Joshua is leading the Jewish people into battle. And they're winning this battle. But because they were, you know, in that day they were fighting with swords, and you can't really fight with swords at night because you can get confused who's on what side because it gets dark. But they were winning this battle, and they wanted to finish this battle in this moment. But as the day was waning and the sun was going down, Joshua prayed, God, let the sun stand still in the sky. And the sun stood still, and his people won the day. And in Habakkuk 3:11, it says, as your sun stands still in the sky. He's referencing Joshua. There was this moment when his people were fighting for the promised land, and they were fighting against these countries that were bigger and stronger than they were, had more numbers, had more weapons. There was no chance they were going to win these battles, and yet they won those battles. It says so in Joshua 10:12. It says, on the day the Lord gave the Israelites victory over the Amorites, Joshua prayed to the Lord in front of all the people of Israel to have the sun stand still. He said, let the sun stand still over Gibeon and the moon over the valley of Ajalon. And the sun stood still. What Habakkuk is doing is he's saying there have been times in our history when it felt like all hope was lost and then God showed himself faithful. And it happened again when it felt like all hope was lost and God showed himself faithful. It happened again when it felt like all hope was lost and God showed himself faithful. And then he ends Habakkuk chapter 3 with these verses in 17 and 18 that say this. And these verses, they're poetic, they are meaningful, they feel relevant to our lives. They feel like the words on the screen or on the pages, they feel like the feelings that we feel when we're overwhelmed, when we're sad, when we're bitter, when life has just not gone our way, when we've gotten that medical diagnosis, when we've lost that person, when we've gotten fired, when we've lost the home. These words feel like how we feel. Even though the fig trees have no blossoms and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the field and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. This is someone who has gone through the hard work. They've spent years knowing what's coming, and then when the inevitable happens, they've done the hard work with God and they are ready to be at peace with it. Even though all of these things happen, even though this terrible thing and this terrible thing and this terrible thing, if these things happen, because God has been faithful here, because God's been faithful here, because God has been faithful here, I can still, in this moment, when all hope is lost, have joy in the God of my salvation. And there are moments in our life when it feels this way, like all hope is lost. Like, all we can see is this thing happening right in front of us. Like, as the drama of our life is playing out in front of us, it's so close, it's so here and so now, it's all we can see, and we feel like this season, this hurt, this wound that is permeating my entire life is the new norm. It's this only thing I'm ever going to live with going on forever. Like, my life is just marked by this pain that I'm experiencing here and I'm experiencing now. But what Habakkuk is saying, he's saying, if you look back at how God has been faithful in the past, it can give you a sense of scale for what's going on right here and right now. And I don't want you to take my word for it. I had a friend of mine who I asked to share a very personal story. And he was brave enough to. And we filmed it yesterday. We had this conversation yesterday. And we filmed it so that you guys could hear his story and understand that what Habakkuk is saying, it isn't just on the pages, it's not just on this stage, but this is how it plays out in real life. It's a little bit longer, it's about a 12-minute video, but I ask you to watch and listen to the story of John and Kathy Schmieder. What's your name? How long have you been at Harbor?
Well, my name is John Schmieder. I've been at Harbor for probably 5 to 6 years. Live in Westford, 4 kids, 3 boys, 1 girl. And I'm a.
How old are they?
They range from 37 to 27 to 22 to 19. Girl being the youngest.
So your youngest is the girl. Does that mean that she's the princess?
Well, it's got to be one in every household, right? She is. Yeah, she is. Yeah.
So as you know, we're in this series on the Book of Habakkuk. And we're in the third week, and in Habakkuk 3, as you and I have talked about, Habakkuk 3, 17 through 18, Habakkuk is explaining that even though good times may happen and bad times may happen in both of these situations, that he can praise the Lord. And you were saying a couple days ago that this is, you can relate to this, you personally. And so why is that? What do those verses bring you back to? Mm. What time in your life comes back most vividly when you hear these verses?
Yeah. Well, close to 3 years ago, my wife of 27 years was diagnosed with lung cancer December 2015. We got that diagnosis, and it was incurable but treatable. And as we had to go, also it went up to her brain, and she needed radiation prior to getting chemo, 6 rounds of chemo. So we were going for radiation for 3 weeks straight, 15 minutes a day prior to the chemo. And One thing that God showed up was she wanted me with her every day, obviously, and I do work all around, but not often in Concord. But we were getting treatment in Emerson Hospital in Concord, and for that particular season, that 3 months, I was a half a mile from the hospital. So she would come over and pick me up right from the job, we'd go, and she would get radiated for 15 minutes a day, and then she would drop me back off. And as well as just her spirit, just the starting in on this, just her faith and her spirit was just amazing. And she would come out of getting radiation, and we befriended another couple from Westford, this restaurant owner in town, and she would come out of there and she would say, "Paul, I left your prayer in there, go get it." And he would go in. It was just the beginning of ultimately the end, but it was really, really nice. And from there, we headed into a chemo treatment at Mass General, and there was going to be 6 rounds, 3 week intervals, and 6 rounds, 3 weeks on. And so we would head into there and get treatment. And throughout that whole process, there was just people in our lives and doctors and nurses that were instrumental in helping us and giving us strength throughout the whole process and up to, you know, her passing as well. And as we got to the fourth round, her body was no longer able to take the treatment. So she was failing and going down a bit. And so they couldn't do that anymore. So they suggested, you know, hospice care and, you know, to a hospice home. And I really didn't want to do that. You know, so, you know, we continued on, and we actually ended up back in the hospital for a 35 or 38-day stay prior to that when she really was not doing well. And there was 4 operations later, 2 or 3 of them major. But I would get in there every day and see her and stay with her the entire day and nights if needed be. Every night we would pray. Talk about the day's activities and what happened that day, and we would pray about what we were thankful for, and talk with one another about what was the takeaway today, what was the joy and the sadness that we found. And it could have been something as simple as getting her out of her room and taking a walk down the hallway to sit in a room and put a puzzle together, or that the sunshine was out and coming in her room. That was just beautiful. Nurses that were signing up to take care of her. They were in line to take care of her because they were moved by her faith and how she moved through this challenge and this obstacle, this adversity in her life. You know, so it was just it was a ride that throughout it, God showed up. And he placed people in our path that helped us, and I think in a lot of ways she helped others. And I would walk in there some mornings, and she was in there, and nurses were gathering on the bed. She'd be basically preaching and holding up her phone with a certain song. It was a Christian song that was just moving, and she was holding court in the morning. And yeah. I would walk in and sit back and look at that, and just, she was bald and she was beautiful. Yeah. and it was powerful. Yeah, and it was really moving. And I'd say, "Oh my gosh, this girl is going through all of this, and look at what she's doing." And it just moved me. It grew me. It made me, you know, who I am today, and going through all that, you know, and increase my faith. And but we moved through that, and it was. And then we ended up 2 weeks at home at my house. They wanted to move her in a hospice house, but I took her home, and I actually had to go to school and learn how to care for her at the house. It was quite a process and things that I didn't know that they didn't want me to, but I said I will, and that They taught me how to care for her at the house, which we did for a couple weeks. And then at the end of that, we ended up in a hospice house, and as well as the hospice nurse that came in daily for the 2 weeks while we were at my house, at our home. She walked in the first day and says, I don't know why I'm here. This is way out of my area that I cover. And I says, well, I know why you're here. And as we started to talk, we talked, and she's a believer, and we would pray together daily. And she would help care for my wife and loved on her, and which was just, once again, God just showing, showing up at the right time.
The other day we were talking about this, and you said that you never get over it, but you do get through it.
Yeah.
And could you unpack that for me a little bit?
You know, you never get over it, you get through it. And by that I mean, you never forget what's in the rearview mirror, what you had. And but you get through it, you have to look in the windshield and you have to move forward, and God can't drive a parked car. And it's with people in your life and through worshiping Him that it gets you through it, and you move on. And the more space between the event to where you are now, it's comforting to know the people that He's placed in your life at the right time, the right place. And it's happened to me many, many, many times. And to move forward, and as you mentioned in sermon a few weeks ago about the headlamp with the just 1 foot in front of you, well, since this happened in my life, that's where I'm at. It's one day at a time. We don't have yesterday. We have the here and the now and the today. And for that, I'm thankful for.
Yeah.
And that's how I roll ever since that she did pass away. But it's comforting to do it that way, and to not look too far, because we're not guaranteed the future.
Yeah. So Habakkuk 3:18, he goes through, in 3:17, he goes through all these things that could go wrong. And they lived in an agricultural society. Mm. And so he says, agriculturally, if all of these things go wrong, and, the cattle aren't there, and the crops aren't there, their life isn't sustainable at that point. He says, but even if that happens, yet I will praise the Lord. And, we've said before that, we talked about before, that these words, they resonate for you personally. Mm. And why is it? What is it about these words that you can personalize and they feel as they resonate for you?
Well, the day my wife passed away was the day that all happened. There was no fruit in the trees. What I knew to be the normal was now not there, and what I expected my life to be wasn't, which is okay. And you're at a loss. And to move through it, I continue to have faith, not be angry, and just continue to be faithful and hold true to my walk, that I've had for my entire life. And, he holds true to, refilling those barns and the trees bearing fruit. And it was difficult, and it has been difficult, but that happens, and I think you, through worship, as you pour yourself into Him, He pours more into you, and He fills my cup.
Yeah.
And He has in many, many ways, and it's phenomenal. It's indescribable, and through it all, you just keep your eyes on Him, and He's been faithful.
So if you could speak, and we'll close out this sort of conversation this way, but if you could speak to someone, if there was someone who's, like, right now in the midst, the eye of the storm of their Habakkuk moment, what would you say to them as someone who, is roughly 3 years removed from yours. So it, you know, you haven't gotten over it, but you did get through it.
Yeah.
And so what would your word of wisdom or advice be to that person?
Well, it's not the end. It's the beginning of a new chapter in your life and a new season. And if you can keep your eyes focused on worshiping Him, He'll take you through it.
Yeah.
And in ways, and to having the wisdom and discernment to see along the way is really key. In listening and waiting and waking up each morning as I do, and just, what do you got for me today, Lord? You know, what are we doing today?
Yeah, you wake up with this sense of expectancy.
Exactly.
Like, God is going to show up today. I just don't know how yet.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And not expectations,
right,
as we've talked about, but expectancy.
Yeah.
With open palms and just waiting on Him.
Yeah.
And but for you to be moving forward and not sinking. So.
Well, John, I know that this was not your normal thing to be, you know, in front of cameras and to be sharing your story. And I know it's a very, very personal story, but I just wanted to say thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Thank you for allowing us to learn from and be challenged by what God has done in and through you in your life and your heart. And I just hope that God continues to show up on a daily basis. And I know that He will, because He is faithful. Because as you go afoot, He's responsible to give you the next one, and He has been for 3 years. So
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it.
So I've known John for going on 10 years now. He's over here. And I felt guilty. I was like, John, you want to share this story, time of your life? Can you share about this chapter? He's like, yes, I can. But then I knew it was like a very, very personal story of loss. And I was like, oh my goodness, I'm making John, I've gotten this is my buddy for like 10 years now, tell this personal story. What a jerk. And then a couple days ago in his devotional, as he opens the devotional to that next day, the devotional for that day is Habakkuk 3:17 through 18. And I was like, okay, so I like, God is up to something, I'm not a jerk. Like he is doing something, he is, and I'm just sort of in alignment with that as opposed to, so anyway, John, thank you for sharing your story. You know what Habakkuk is it's an invitation to understanding your own brokenness. And what we have every week is every week you come and we teach in series, and there are these graphics like this one, which this is like a dark black shadowy background with this gold crack that goes through it. And this is a metaphor. We've been leading up to this metaphor for 3 weeks now. And this is a metaphor for this Japanese art form called kintsugi. You'll see a picture of a kintsugi pottery here. What happens is when the Japanese had pottery that would break, they would fix that pottery with gold. Now you would think, why they use gold? Because this pottery is now worthless. What they would do is they would use gold and they'd melt it into the cracks. And they would highlight the asymmetry of it. They would highlight the brokenness. They would find the art and the beauty in the brokenness. Like in our sort of like American ethos, we want like symmetry, we want clean lines, we want simple. And they would say, no, let's highlight the brokenness. Let's find the art and the beauty in the brokenness. And this is what Habakkuk is. Habakkuk is an invitation. This is what God is up to. God takes us, even though we are at times broken, even though we go through the times where it feels like all hope is lost, and He melts gold, and He turns us into art. He finds beauty in the brokenness. Ernest Hemingway says it this way. He says, the world breaks everyone, but afterwards some are strong in the broken places. Habakkuk is an invitation to say, even though all hope is lost, even though I'm in this painful season, even though the fig trees have no blossoms and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty, yet I rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. Habakkuk is an invitation to find beauty in the brokenness, to say, yes, in this moment, I feel like this thing I'm experiencing is the entire world. But if you look at this thing in terms of what's happened in the past, how God has been faithful here, and how God has been faithful here, and how God has been faithful here, and even in this moment when it feels like the world is crumbling, that he shows up and he gives me the next foot, and I take that foot, and he shows me another foot, and I take that foot. Even in those moments, he is faithful. And when you see that, what he's trying to do is create beauty from the brokenness. You, like Habakkuk, can say, "Yet I rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation." That is the invitation of the book of Habakkuk. It's an expectation that God puts on himself to be faithful over and over and over and over again. But then we rely on that faithfulness and we find joy and beauty in the brokenness. Let's pray. God, I thank you for your faithfulness. I thank you for the way that you take our brokenness, the times when the pottery of our life breaks and we feel like there is no worth left, and you make beauty from that brokenness. God, you place the pressure on yourself to show yourself faithful time and time and time again. And yet you always are. And so for that, we are deeply thankful. Inevitably, in a room like this, there are people who are going through their Habakkuk moment right now. When it just feels like they don't know which way is up, there is no north, and they don't know how they're going to move forward because all they can see is this thing they're going through. God, you are in that moment with them. And so give them the clarity to feel your presence in that moment. And we thank you for Habakkuk. We thank you for the journey that he went on. He didn't know that when he was feeling those feelings, how encouraging his journey was going to be. That he didn't know when he was going through this experience of seeing what was down the road, that he was going to be a light and a hope for thousands, if not millions, of people moving forward because of his journey. So God, we thank you. We thank you for the way that you always show up. We thank you for the way that you don't cause pain in our life just for the sake of it, but you're always up to something. God, I thank you for your faithfulness. Remind us of that faithfulness, God, in our moments when we feel like we don't know which way is up. Remind us of that faithfulness, God, when we are in our Habakkuk moments. We love you and thank you. In your name, amen.